I'm Mindy.
And I'm Darren, and we are the Rants Macabre, a part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of the Rants Macabre, please visit Fangoria.com.
When I get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide. Where I stop and I turn and I go for a ride till I get to the bottom.
On this episode, we have an interview with the filmmakers of Manson Family Vacation. It's a new film by Jay Davis starring Jay Duplass and Linus Phillips. The basic synopsis goes, two brothers tour Charles Manson murder sites. One is a devoted family man, one is devoted to the family. But it's also a road trip movie about two brothers who never really understood each other trying to bond over the impossible and improbable kind of situations.
So here's a little bit of background for those who aren't obsessive about Charles Manson. One could argue that Charles Manson never had a chance. He never knew his dad. His mom was a con woman who never wanted him. Charles was pawned off to his fundamentalist grandparents and spent a lot of his youth as a ward of the state and later incarcerated for petty crimes. Always small for his age, he was abused and sexually abused. By the time he got out of prison in the late 60s, the world had changed. Free love and psychedelics had changed the landscape. In prison, he had become equally fascinated by Scientology and Dale Carnegie's means of influencing people. Manson went from being a petty criminal to a pimp and eventually cult leader. For those interested, the details of the rise of the Manson family and their brutal crimes can be found in the book Helter Skelter, and recently Karina Longworth on our podcast, You Must Remember This, did a 12-part series on Charles Manson's Hollywood.
Now, what you said about Charlie Manson as a kid that started out with the odds against him, mm-hmm. I want to go on record myself and just say I hate excuses for people like this.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to sound like
your haunches go up.
Yeah,
suggestion that this was out of his hands.
Exactly. And I think someone especially like Charles Manson would jump at the idea and the opportunity to say this was out of my hands. And he's a man who really doesn't take responsibility. I think in interviews, and you see that with his writing and the way he conducts himself with his fans, he is a person who doesn't take responsibility.
You people have done everything in the world to me. Doesn't that give me equal right? I can do anything I want to you people at any time I want to. Because that's what you've done to me. If you spit in my face and smack me in the mouth and throw me in solitary confinement for nothing, what do you think's going to happen when I get out of here? Guilty. I wouldn't do anything that I felt guilty about.
You don't feel guilty at all?
There's no need to feel guilty. I haven't done anything I'm ashamed of.
And that's though not to say that he honestly didn't commit any murder. He was there.
Arguably. Well, there was one guy, Latsapapa, who Charles Manson shot in the chest. He just happened to survive. But that guy came back around during the trial period. Mm-hmm. So he had it in him, but he was far more
manipulative.
Committed to, sort of telling people what to do rather than doing it himself. And one might argue that he was kind of a coward and cultist disguise.
Sure. But also to me then, again, because I am a person who really likes people to take responsibility. They're also, though, he's being blamed for something that if you can convince someone to do something, that person was going to do it already. At the end of the day, you can't make someone commit a crime, especially something like murder, if they didn't already have it in them.
Okay, let's talk about the movie, because we lucked out in the opportunity to interview these filmmakers, and twice more we lucked out that the movie is really good.
Yes.
So thank you, Jay Davis, for making a great movie, because this could have been really awkward otherwise.
Yeah, I was so worried when we sat down to watch the movie. I was so worried, like, if I hate this, how am I going to sit down and talk to these people?
Right.
And what kind of questions am I going to ask?
Thankfully,
this was great.
There was so much good stuff to talk about. So let's talk about Jay Duplass and Linus Phillips. Linus Phillips plays Conrad, who is an adopted brother who came before his character, Nick. he's given up all his worldly possessions and he has hit the road. He has hitchhiked his way to California to spend some quality time with his brother.
Yeah, and that's before he starts a new job with an environmental group.
Right, that's kind of how he calms his family down. His brother, he calms him down by saying, I've got a job. I've got this new job,
so don't worry about me.
Yeah. So Jay Duplass plays Nick, who's seemingly a corporate lawyer. He's a lawyer. Mm-hmm. He is not a
criminal lawyer.
He's kind of a character who's going through the motions of, like, you get a job, you get a good job, you get a wife,
then
you get
a kid. Partner and you do these things. And These are the things that everyone should do.
And meanwhile, his brother is kind of like on this wanderlust journey of figuring out. First he's an artist and then he kind of gives that up and he's on to the next
now
thing.
Now he's doing this new thing at 40 years old.
No, it's not irresponsible. This is a time in your life where you're supposed to be untethering yourself. You know, when you're 40, you got to break free.
You're being sarcastic.
I'm not being mean.
You are being mean. You're being sarcastic and condescending.
You don't have anything to worry about, all right?
I am worried. You don't have a house. Mm-hmm. You don't have any possessions. You don't have a job.
I have a job with an environmental organization in Death Valley.
Are you serious?
Oh.
Yeah, I just thought I'd pass through and say hi to you guys.
That's really good. Happy.
So his big effort to bond with his brother is to visit all the Manson family, some murder sites specifically in L.A.
Well, there are these sites all around the city that I was hoping we could go to. I have it all mapped out. It's amazing because, like, no one knows that, like, right there, you know, that's the LaBianca house, you know, or the Tate house.
Wait, these are the murder site houses?
You're acting so uptight. This is a thing people do.
But it's that kind of joy that he brings to the character where you almost feel bad being like, you're disgusting. People actually died here. But you feel bad because he's so excited about
it. You don't want to crush his enthusiasm.
Exactly.
What are you doing? Oh, God damn it.
Come on.
Charles Manson killed people right here. You have to be fucking respectful about that.
He wasn't even here that night. He wasn't at the Tate house or the LaBianca house. Well, he didn't kill anyone.
Then why is he in jail for murder?
So the most unsettling dynamic is the idea that, and there are clips of Manson in the movie.
Yeah.
And I'd say the majority of people look at those clips and Manson's sort of creepy shark dead eyes and you go, that guy talking is a maniac.
Right.
But this movie kind of proposes that, like, if you were watching that clip and next to you is your brother and he's looking at it like,
this is awesome.
Dude is totally right. He's got some really great ideas. Like, now you've got that to deal with.
Yeah.
That's where the movie, you know, sort of ebbs and flows from.
Right.
Is that dynamic.
And I found myself as the movie went on, you think, you know, that Linus's character, Conrad, is crazy, and maybe to some extent he's a little delusional, but Nick really is a villain in this. I feel that's Jay Duplass's character. He's just ready to, like, cut you down at any second because you're not doing what is the quote-unquote maybe right thing.
Dude.
See, I knew. Fucking bring up Charles Manson and you fucking freak out.
Everybody freaks out.
Yeah.
Everybody freaks out when you bring up Charles Manson.
I think he sees the, like, potential disaster. I don't think of him as a villain. He's definitely the straight man
who's,
you know, sort of being bounced off of as, like, the rational, sane person.
But he's very sarcastic and he's very rude and to his own brother, you know, and even though this brother is adopted, they're supposed to still be brothers.
I think his heart is definitely in the right place where, like, you know, he wants to put up the picture that his brother painted and he's giving him this like retro Polaroid camera and he's trying to encourage him. Like, all he knows is that his brother's an artist and he's really good at it. So he's like, all right, well, on that level, I'll try and bond with him. But his brother's like, I'm over that.
Right.
So, like, now what have you got? So that's, I could see him sort of, his character is cynical. I'll give you that. But he gave it a good try. So the film, while it was scripted, is very naturalistic, and we've talked about going between, like, the humor and legitimate bonding to complete judgmental reactions to things. The filmmakers have talked about filming with two cameras going at a lot of time, and I will say, for an indie movie, it looked very good.
It looked to me so much like a documentary.
Yeah.
So much, and I thought the acting was so natural because everyone knew everybody. Yeah. And because they were all, I think, filmmakers themselves.
Yeah, everybody in this movie, you know, has directed their own movies.
I thought it was so natural and so quick. And you could tell that they were friends in that they can play off each other so quickly.
Yeah, yeah. And having two cameras makes it a lot easier to edit those moments together. And in the interview, they'll talk about the sort of openness to that opportunity. Speaking of filmmakers, so yes, so Linus Phillips made his movie Bass Ackwards, which is also a road movie, but like dedicatedly so. He wrote it and directed it and starred in it. And it's a really, I don't know, I liked it as a character piece. It was kind of, it's a little wandering. And interestingly, if there were more drugs involved, it could serve as like a prequel to this. Because
oh, really?
He is kind of like looking for purpose and doing so on this cross-country trip where he's engaging with a lot of different kinds of people. And Jade Duplass should be a familiar name and face because he's produced a bunch of movies with his brother Mark Duplass, who everybody knows from The League and The Puffy Chair and Baghead. For those movies that they've made together, Jade Duplass has been camera guy. So you talked about the documentary feel.
Right.
The movie Baghead is very fly on the wall, but at the same time, it's as if like you're watching a family movie.
Right, right.
And they kind of embrace that dynamic in the film. Certain things call to mind that style where the sort of zoom ins on characters that like you generally only get in like a home movie style film.
And with this natural acting, I think one of the most like standout characters who's not, she's not on screen all that much and she's very much a supporting character.
But she pushes the story. She kind of
absolutely
shapes the story.
That's Nick's wife's name is Amanda, and she's played by Leonora Pitts, and she brings this real, you know, when Jay Duplass's character Nick is really being sarcastic and he's needling kind of Conrad's character, she's the one to step in and stand up for Conrad in a very adult way, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love that she calls him out, and I love that she, you know, she isn't the nagging wife or this or that, and she doesn't demand anything really from Nick, just demands that he be a good person to his brother. So up next, you're going to hear we sat down with Jay Davis, Jay Duplass, and Linus Phillips to talk about Manson Family Vacation.
Okay, so we're here with Jay Davis, Jay Duplass, and Linus Phillips.
Yep.
I did my best to look up interviews you guys have done and sort of find questions that you guys haven't been asked 1,002 times.
Awesome.
Just 1,001.
So you've talked about your interest in Charles Manson and how it is a polarizing thing, and it's a sort of conversation, if not argument, that you guys have had. He is such a polarizing figure. I'm curious where your fascination comes from.
I got interested in the Manson family when I was a kid. I kind of stumbled on the Helter Skelter book and was looking through it at these pictures and was caught looking through it, and the book was taken from me and put on a high shelf, and you know, I was told that I wasn't to open that book again. So you know, an obsession was kind of born.
Then you're in your room listening to Helter Skelter, just planning your attack on that book.
Yeah. So parents, yeah, you know, if you catch your kid with the Helter Skelter book,
they'll direct a movie later. You know, just that's not so bad. I have a question. Did you? Because I didn't see it in any previous interviews with you. Did you ever write him a letter yourself?
No. No, I, my interest was mostly when I was a kid. I also, you know, when I was in high school, I had a friend whose obsession was kind of beyond mine even. And kind of, he had pictures of Manson in his locker and would kind of provocatively like shout his name in the hallways. Yeah, that kind of thing. So
no letters for you. No.
Not for me. I'm not sure about my friend.
Yeah. Now, was it that your parents didn't want you seeing it and that's maybe what drew you to it? Or what was it about him that made you say, like, I identify in some way? Or
well, I mean, it was funny when I looked in the book, it, you know, there were these pictures of these beautiful people. There were these horrible kind of murders. You know, there was like sex and death kind of in these pages. And then there was this, you know, there were these pictures of Manson himself, and he looked so kind of different in each picture. You know, he looked angelic in some pictures and really devilish in others. His hair was long, his hair was shaved, his hair, you know. He just seemed like such a kind of chameleon that, it, you know, it really fascinated me. Like, who is this person who looks so many different ways, you know?
Yeah, it seems there are clips in the movie of him, you know, just short of like proselytizing in these interview scenarios.
Yeah.
And you kind of get the feeling that like we're kind of getting like the later, like too much acid Manson, where like any charisma he had, he kind of melted away, I imagine.
Yeah. I mean, his interviews are, you know, we use some in the movie, and they, yeah, he, I don't know. He has a certain.
I mean, he's pretty, there's worse ones. He's pretty charismatic in those. I mean, there's some where he just seems, yeah.
Completely
bad. I mean, Linus Linus, who plays the Manson-obsessed brother, Conrad, didn't have, you know, didn't have much exposure to any of that. So you kind of watched all those interviews in preparation. What were your kind of...
I mean, yeah. I mean, it was just fascinating. I think... First, because I'm like, oh, cool, I get to play a guy who's obsessed with this, and this stuff is fun to watch. It's just great research. So some of my interest came from just like, oh, this is going to make the movie better, because if anything can get worked in from this guy, because he is so charismatic. And like people would talk about even people who weren't fans or anything, and they were of him or members of the family, they... You know, say like in the, I think there's a part in Helter Skelter where there was some eyewitness saying when he walked into the courtroom, she like kind of turned and was like, who is that? You know, and then realized, oh, it was Charles Manson. But there was just something like dynamic about him. And you wonder if it was like kind of a conspiracy where they didn't want him to like talk too much, or at some point, well, you know, or because they were scared he would like control people in the room.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
the courtroom stuff and like, trying to represent
and you wonder and, like, what the heck is that about? Is that seems just like voodoo, but then you can, I don't know, you can kind of see maybe there was a point to that because he was so dynamic.
Let me ask you, in terms of your character, it becomes extra eerie the more we find out about Conrad. The deeper we go, I think it becomes eerie because you get a sense of like who falls for Manson, you know, who had just the right kink that Manson sort of spotted and would exploit. And I was going to, you know, we're only just getting started, but I was going to congratulate you that the role like sort of teeters on that line where it's like you never know just where it's going. But thanks. Could you, so you talked a little bit about watching his clips and how he is kind of like magnetic a little bit. Okay, actually, this is a question for the Jays. You guys go back as far as Austin? Is that right?
No, we've been friends in L.A. We met when I was putting up posters in a video store for the Puffy Chair. And we basically were just friends for, you know, probably 5 years. And then he was an editor, and I asked him to edit my documentary, Kevin, and that was a great collaboration.
Okay,
and then,
that's what I thought.
And then he started, he decided he wanted to try to make a movie, and that's where this began.
Cool. So, Jay, this is your first feature film. Everybody in the film has made their own movies. What was that process like in terms of when to, like, take control, when to lean back?
I mean, these guys are both directors, but they approached this very much as actors and got deep into their characters and deep into their backstories. So I feel like it was, you know, it was very easy to sort of find my position with them and to sort of encourage their instincts as actors.
Sure. And then for Linus and Jay Duplass, because the acting is really, really great. I think it's really technically very natural, and it's exciting to watch. And I wondered, is it because you guys have both done and worked on documentaries, because to me it had a very, and for you, Jay, the director, it's almost shot like a documentary, and I thought it was very natural and very real. And so I wondered if by observing people in your documentaries, maybe did that help you with your acting or what you were thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think documentary in general is probably the biggest influence on my own filmmaking, my own style of doing things, because I am obsessed with realism and real people and how they operate in the world. And Linus is too, and Jay is too, and that's where we all met here, is we wanted to make the most truthful, frighteningly real version of what this would be. And, you know, so Linus and I talked a lot about brotherhood. We both have brothers, what that's really like, how brothers truly communicate with each other, how they don't really say anything directly. Everything is abstracted.
A compliment is never a compliment.
Yeah, and how every statement.
You look thinner.
Yeah.
Oh, no, yeah? you were fat last year, though.
You know? Oh, yeah. I was almost as fat as like that whole like 15-year period that includes now that you had.
Yeah, but you know? I feel like you're coming out of it. If you lost another 5 pounds, then by next year I could actually say you're thin.
So we started we started realizing the more that we went, that like the mystery is much more so than being of the Manson family past and present, is the mystery of who these guys are and what's going on with them. And so we played that up a lot and, you know, tried to play the polar opposites. Obviously, plot wise, we're at odds with each other the whole movie, but we personally have a lot of fun together, and we wanted to show the complexity of their relationship by having the characters have fun in the midst of very oppositional things happening. And we also made each other laugh a lot, because brothers do that, you know? So we just kind of like had this, you know, repartee the whole time where we were fucking with each other and making each other laugh. And we would, you know, vacillate wildly between screaming and yelling at each other and just giggling, you know?
It was harder to do the tense scenes, but I mean, but we liked each other and wanted to be good, you know? Yeah. So I think it made it easier too, because we're like, all right, let's do this. All right, this is the job now. But it was funny. Yeah. That was acting.
Yeah. And I mean, there were just times where we would do a dark scene and then one of us would just bust out laughing at the other one for reasons that we don't totally understand, because there was so much potential energy and uncomfortable stuff going on.
It's very tense. Yeah. Some of the scenes between you two are very, very intense. And Linus, you sometimes it goes from like joy, gleefulness to maniac, and in just like a split second. So I wondered, you know, number one, what were you thinking when you're, because your character I feel switches very often between maybe like a legitimate love for the brother, and then maybe a little more maniacal.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just like it was like some exaggerated form of hate that you have for someone that whose love you want so bad that you want to destroy them if they don't give it to you. You know, I mean, it's kind of like a little bit of a stalker thing, or I don't know, just this that vibe with it, where it's just like, I mean, and I think I can relate to someone who's just feels that hungry for acceptance, you know? So I think it came from more from that. But it's funny because Conrad was like, it's like bringing it so much from himself, you know? It's like he's putting so much weight on it, you know? I don't know. But the brother's too hard on him too. They're both like attacking it in such a tense way.
My relationship with my brother isn't exactly that close, but we are half brothers with very little in common. But there's always that subtext of like, you know, it's the kind of abuse you can only give to family and get away with it, like that sort of closeness. And it says a lot that, you know, your character came to him as like, let's try and figure this out. Let's try and start again.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, like Yeah, and I was so happy about this Manson stuff, and it was going to, like, figure out a lot of stuff for me in my life, you know? So I just wanted to share it with my brother.
Yeah. It's funny. I guess there's something very childlike at the same time that, like, when you find something you love, you're just like, everybody, get a load of this. This is awesome. And it just happens to be the worst human being.
Yeah, my brother and I will go from, like, laughing and joking to, like, you just hit some little tipping point and you're just like, then you don't talk for a month, you know. It's just like,
but, and I feel like Linus's character just has such a, you know, there's a sweetness about him where you can't, you know, even though he's doing these kind of atrocious things at times, it's very hard to be angry at him.
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning of the movie, the way he looks, the way he acts, the fact that he's poking and prodding my character makes him seem like the dark one. And I think, you know, at least towards the middle of the movie, you start to really question which brother is darker than the other one, because there is a hopefulness and a childlike quality to his character, whereas my character is pretty darn closed. And that's some of the issues that we're sort of like raising underneath the whole.
Yeah, there are no real like villains in this movie. You know, it's there are people who are just
people getting in their own way. Kind of. There was that great moment where you're talking about your kid. I think Max is the character, right? And how he's having a hard time, and you're just like, it's childhood. Kids have a hard time, but Conrad's intuitive enough, and he's been in that position where he's like, well, no, he's dealing with some shit, and it goes back to the father passing away and how he's been introduced to the concept of death. But yeah, I guess your character Jay is cynical enough that, like, no, life is hard. He's a kid having a hard life. That's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah, I think it's terrifying that my son might be like my brother, who I think is crazy, or who I've decided is crazy for my own edification. And it's terrifying to me that my family life isn't going very well, and that this lunatic, my brother, might actually hold some of the answers for how to have a better family life and how to enjoy my life more. It's like, that's the last thing I want to admit in my life. And so I'm fighting it to the death.
Well, I think what's interesting too, we've talked about this, like when you care for someone so much and you're closed off, you can't even, it doesn't come out as caring. It just comes out as worry, you know, sure. And then that you can't be there for the person, like, you know.
It just comes out as yelling. Yeah, and yelling. Controlling.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And for Jay Davis, the wife is actually one of my favorite characters, because she's
brilliantly portrayed by Leonore Pitts.
Yeah, I mean, it was really great, and she just calls your ass out all the time. And I wondered where that came from. Why do you think she would be married to him? And so why did you write it that way?
I mean, it was inspired, you know, kind of by my wife and, you know, the my mother, you know, the female figures in my life who have been helpful to me and, you know, tell me when I'm being insane and bring me back to earth.
I really liked her in the movie. I just like really loved it, because I was watching it with my husband, and Linus, he's crazy. And my husband goes, yeah, but Jay's a dick. And I love that the wife like calls him out on it. It's just my favorite kind of relationship I love everyone's relationship with each other, but I love the husband and wife too. I thought that was really great.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of Jay's intentions when making it was this would be a typical role where you'd have the wife be the shrew, mm-hmm. you know, and call and just come down on him. And she does call him out on stuff, but it's more in this way that she's challenging him to be the better version of himself. And so, and she's really talented and funny and adept, and she really brought like a sort of complex magic to it.
Yeah, I loved her.
Yeah. She was another person in your film who's also a filmmaker, right? Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you this earlier in terms of like wearing the hats of writer, director, producer, was there a temptation to also edit it, or was that something you were happy to hand off?
I mean, I was lucky enough to have two editors, who, you know, Nick Sherman, edited first. He's a director, and I had actually cut a movie of his, a documentary years ago. So we sort of switched positions on this. So he started, and then Dave Boyle, who's an independent filmmaker, came on later in the process and edited. And I was able to separate myself from editing kind of more than I ever thought I'd be able to, just because... you know, I mean, like, I remember when Dave was cutting, you know, I watched a scene and, you know, I went to him and said, I think we should take, you know, 3 frames off the end of this shot. And he said, I already took exactly 3 frames off the end of the shot. And I was like, we were, you know, we were very in sync. So it was nice to be able to have that distance.
You guys shot generally with 2 cameras going? At all times? Well, most times?
Most of the time.
Whenever there's 2 people in a scene or more than 2 people and there's something emotional going down, I mean, it's just, that's a part of all 3 of our ethic, just to capture that moment for real so that you don't have to replicate it.
And when you're improvising too, I mean, there's no way to sort of turn the one camera around and recapture, right, you know, the kind of moments that they were having. Yeah, one more time.
Yeah. I mean, a movie that is, you know, depends squarely upon the truthfulness and the magic of the performances, that's where all of our value is. And I'm just, you know, it's just not worth it to shoot sides when something like that's at stake.
Yeah, I would imagine it's got to save you guys a little bit just in terms of energy and not having to, like, all right, take 17... And
yeah, you remember that thing you did for an hour and a half ago in the first part of take 3? Do that again.
And do it acting to someone who's just giving you a dead face right in front of you. Yeah. Exactly. I have a question about the location. When you guys went on location to the La Bianca house and the Tate murders. Linus, I get that it's acting, like, I get it, but did you ever feel like, I'm a real dick wearing this Manson shirt standing outside of this house?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the scene I had the most trouble with, honestly. And, mm-hmm. like, I think I probably argued with you about it. Like, I don't know if he should be, like, gleeful. You know, I don't think he should be, like, all... Like, maybe it's, like, a darker thing, and he's just, like, you know, I don't know. And I kind of wanted the thing to be brought out. I mean, all this is just, like, me trying to write and change things is me realizing that it's just, like, anxiety about performance oftentimes. So, you know, I don't want to scare all you independent filmmakers who will hire me in the future. But I've kind of...
He's a dream.
I've become aware of, like, okay, this is, you know, sometimes you use your writer brain when it helps you and then, you know. But we actually ended up adding stuff to that scene, which I feel like... helped us, you know, like a little bit of the conspiracy theory stuff about Manson being innocent, you know, not innocent, but he wasn't there. Sorry, didn't mean innocent, but I mean, Connie would say that probably, you know, in his moment of fervor, but he would actually, if you really talk to him, I think Connie would still be like, yeah, I know, I don't know what to think. Yeah, I guess he is bad, because he admits, he was like, well, no, he only tied them up here at the La Bianca house. So he's not totally delusional. He's just kind of like wanting to believe a better version. But that scene was really hard for me. But I think it was easier because we, like, kind of added this other part, and I was trying to give you what you had imagined in your head.
Right. I mean,
and it was good story wise, but yeah, it was hard.
I mean, it took some time for you to come around to some of the darker aspects, you know, of the character, I think. Oh.
Well, I was just trying to get my head around it. I was like, well, if it is darker, and he's like laughing at this murder site, maybe his whole character's darker. But then, like, we realized that wasn't really true. Like, I should still play it as honestly as myself, you know, and as truthfully as I could, you know, and not like a character, but just like me. But then there were parts when it was kind of like acting, you know?
There was the factor of having smoked weed before going. So it sort of, it speaks to, like, you know, you're kind of giddy. You're, you know, you're maybe not appreciating the emotional gravitas of the moment, because, you know, you're kind of racing and going like, I'm here.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that comes from people who are interested in the folklore around Manson, lose perspective because they're just thinking about the camaraderie they have with someone else that they go on a site with, and then they're laughing and joking, you know, but they're like, oh, I can't even find, we jumped over on a guardrail to get to the Spawn Ranch, and you know, so it becomes about something else. They're not thinking about the insensitivity.
Well, I think the other thing too is that what always grounded us is bringing it back to the relationship between the brothers. I mean, ultimately, I think what you feel in that scene is that it's not about the Manson murders, and it's not about, what it's really about is you bringing me there and being excited for me to see it and being equally excited to either have me accept or to disturb me. But either way, you're going to get a reaction out of it.
Yeah,
I mean, that's how I...
He's inflicting a little pain, on you.
I'm
you're
testing
and prodding
you,
and testing me. And you're either going to get... You're going to win either way, because you're either going to piss me off or you're going to get me to be on your side. And something's going to change and something's going to move, and you're in a place in your life where you just can't take any more inactivity. So,
yeah.
I mean, I always...
It's a real distortion, but he does have a clear emotional agenda, but it's like a real distorted way of going about it. But
and
totally...
It's, and it's like, your only option at this point, basically, is like, you know...
I mean...
you feel that it's your only option with me.
Yeah, and I just kept thinking about the fact that, like, yeah, the connection to death and the funeral and, like, I don't know, I feel bad about that, but, you know, I know... It's like this thing that we can't even talk about. And somehow I want you to say, oh, you're talking about death and you couldn't even come to Dad's funeral. So, I mean, that line, like, was really kind of connected it all for me. And,
well, you guys were at these venues. You visit the Tate, the gate outside of the Tate home. And the LaBianca house we've talked about. Was there ever a vibe to the locations in terms of, like, some horrible shit went down here?
I mean, honestly, when you're shooting a movie, the overwhelming vibe is, or when shooting an independent film, the overwhelming vibe is, oh, Jesus, God, please let us get this before the sun goes down. I mean,
that's the biggest
way, kind of dread entirely.
That is the dread of independent filmmaking is way bigger than Manson.
it's true. Yeah.
Yeah, there never seemed to be enough hours in the day during production. And, yeah, you're just trying to bring it over the line.
It'd be a relief to think about murder or something. Oh, what if I told you I could stop time and I just took you on a tour right now? Okay, great. Then we can, like, actually know the scene lines better and then go ahead and do the scene.
Jay, you've talked about these scenes kind of being like almost Hollywood attractions at this point, where people weren't treating it. They weren't looking at you sideways, and they weren't weirded out by the idea of a film being made.
I mean, when Linus and I did scouting early on, and yeah, I mean, it's funny, like, people, you know, while we were standing at one of the places, you know, people...
A bus came up.
Or a van filled with, like
business... Like one of the Star Tours kind
business,
of thing?
It was just businessmen in a van, and they, you know, they were there to kind of look at this place, you know, the last people you'd kind of expect to be doing it. But it's an interesting little world.
This is kind of a non sequitur, but the poster for the movie is outstanding. The two brothers staring at each other over this chasm.
Thanks.
Of Manson.
Yeah, that's Yen Tan did that, who's a director also in Austin. Yeah, and I am, like, I love that. I'm unabashedly proud of that poster.
It's a great piece of art.
And following this non sequitur with another one, I have to congratulate Heather McIntosh on that score. That was so cool. And I've decided I call it now Nouveau Retro. That's what I've decided to call that. So you can have that if you guys want to use that.
We can tell Heather what her style is now.
Yeah, exactly. Please tell the artist what she's thinking.
Yeah, I loved working with Heather. I had, you know, heard the score of Compliance. Mm-hmm. And when I found out we had a possibility of getting her, I was psyched, you know, because I'm like a music person as much as a movie person in some ways. So, you know, and she has this incredible, like, pedigree of, like, playing with the Elephant Six people, and she toured with Lil Wayne. I mean, she has an incredible history, and she was fantastic to work with. Yeah. You know, that the song that we do that we have at the beginning, kind of over the opening, was something that we had another piece in there, and I decided kind of last minute that we needed a different piece, and we just, you know, she was able to churn this thing out that had, you know, multiple instruments,
and she's professional, playing a lot,
like,
correct?
Harmonica player, yeah, that she brought in. You know, we were listening to like Glenn Campbell records and Harry Nilsson to sort of get the vibe right for it. But yeah, she just was fantastic to work with.
Speaking of influences, were there any movies that you looked at as sort of templates or sort of inspiration for the look of the movie or the feel?
You know, when I sat down with Sean McAlee, the DP, it wasn't, I mean, we kind of knew the retro feel that we wanted in certain places. The movies that were influential, though, to me, were kind of like a movie like Something Wild, Jonathan Demme's movie, just because it kind of takes you on this wild ride and you don't know where you're going, and, you know, it sort of evolves and changes throughout. And then I remember Sean and I watched Paris, Texas, very different vibe, but, you know, it explored this brother relationship. So was a road movie.
And Rushmore too, right? No, sorry, Rush Hour. I ruined my own joke. Cut that out. Let me take it out. Like, I was waiting to do that joke for like 5 minutes. I missed it, and I was like, I'll let it go by. Oh, and Rush Hour 2, right?
Rush Wait, Hour
did,
2?
Did you mean Rush Hour 2, the T-W-O or T-O-O?
Yeah, both.
The Deuce? One in Hong Kong.
Rush Hour. Just the trilogy. I call them the trilogy. There's the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy
set, and
the Rush Hour trilogy.
Yes.
They're right up there.
Set, right?
They're, yeah, I do, actually.
I guess
Ratner. Rat Pack.
This would be the last question. It was very cool to see Tobin Bell in I'll call it like a sweet sort of paternal role.
Yeah.
What was it like working with Tobin Bell?
He was fantastic. He read the script. One of our producers knew him and was able to get him the script, and I talked to him, and he was so intelligent in approaching the script and had notes not just about his character but about, you know, the brothers, and just brought so much to the table and cared so much about the you know, the whole movie. You
yeah
know,
he was really into
part.
The process, I mean, of it.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was real actor's,
it was
actor.
Very cool to watch your character respond to him. Like, you guys fell in step as far as like father and son very quickly. And it was, I mean, that's why I called it sweet, because like all of a sudden you're kind of getting the attention you've always, your character had always wanted.
Yeah.
I just had him play my dad again in another movie.
Oh, yeah? Is it Rainbow Time?
Yeah, Rainbow Time, yeah.
Okay. And
to be clear, he doesn't play your dad in this movie.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, right.
He's full dad in your next.
Yeah, in my other movie, it was full, instead of just a father figure, yeah.
Not full frontal, just full.
This is an adult film.
Full frontal dad.
Full parental.
No,
it's for adults.
This is absolutely clear to everyone, right, at this point.
Okay, thank you guys so much. The Manson Family Vacation is on VOD, iTunes, Amazon. Buy it, rent it, check it out. Thank you guys again so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to The Rants Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rants Macabre, contact Ken at fangoria.com.